From WILL Illinois Newsroom, this is 217 Today. I'm Brian Moldeen. It's Thursday, October 1st. Coming up, staff retention is a long-standing problem within the Indiana Department of Corrections, but it's gotten worse during the COVID-19 pandemic. That story from Side Effects Public Media is just ahead. But first, these headlines. Illinois public health officials are unveiling guidance for celebrating Halloween during a pandemic. They advise that candy be placed spaced out on a table for trick-or-treaters. Governor J.P. Pritzker also says indoor haunted houses will be closed.
The problem is with indoor haunted houses, which tend to be very enclosed, not a lot of open space. And as a result, the viral load can get high very quickly in a space like that.
Hay rides, pumpkin patches, and apple orchards can remain open with social distancing restrictions. Health officials also say a costume mask does not replace something that covers your nose and mouth. COVID-19 moved more schools and work online, heightening the need for internet access. Many rural communities still do not have access to high-speed internet. Harvest Public Media's Seth Bodine reports on a study that shows how government policy can enhance or inhibit connectivity.
State funding and a state broadband office are two things that improve rural broadband access, according to a study from Oklahoma State University and Purdue. But not all state policies are helpful. 19 states, including Missouri, Nebraska, and Texas, restrict whether cities and municipalities can have their own broadband network. Brian Whitaker, an author of the study, says this inhibits access to high-speed internet.
What our analysis found is that when these restrictions are in place, that reduces your overall availability by about 3 to 4 percentage points.
Whitaker says about half of states have dedicated funding for broadband, and 30 have dedicated broadband offices. About 77% of rural areas have access to broadband. Seth Bodine, Harvest Public Media.
State public health officials are warning that our region could soon face additional mitigations. Public Health Director Dr. Ngozi Ezike says the University of Illinois' massive COVID-19 testing program is overshadowing some trends across the region. She says with U of I testing data, the region's positivity rate is just 2.2%, but when that data is removed, it jumps all the way to 7.1%. If the region reaches an 8% positivity rate for 3 consecutive days with U of I testing data removed, it could see further mitigations, such as closing restaurants and bars to indoor service. At the beginning of the pandemic, many people took up gardening as a hobby. So-called COVID gardens popped up all over Illinois. Now that it's time to harvest, Illinois Newsroom's Dana Cronin checked in with some COVID gardeners to see how the season went.
And now what I have planted is some spinach and a green bean plant back there.
Robert Jones lives in Urbana and got serious about gardening this year.
I can tell you right now, if the pandemic wouldn't have happened, the garden would not be as big as it is now, because I wouldn't have had enough time to plant that stuff and then take care of it.
He planted everything from cucumbers and lettuce to squash and pumpkins. He says gardening has connected him to more of his neighbors.
That's how I got my shishito plant. That's actually how I got a tomato plant as well.
Jones says he'll continue gardening. He's even considering getting chickens for next year. I'm Dana Cronin, Illinois Newsroom.
Still to come, we head east on I-74 to Indianapolis to find out how the COVID-19 pandemic is affecting staffing turnover at the Indiana Department of Corrections. That's next on 217 Today.
The rematch is set for the 13th Congressional District. Republican incumbent Rodney Davis debates Democratic challenger Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan, October 5th at 7 p.m., brought to you by WCIA, WILL, and the League of Women Voters. Watch it live on WILL-TV or X49, or listen to AM 580 or FM 90.9. Davis and Londrigan debating live, October 5th at 7 p.m.
This is 217 Today. I'm Brian Moldeen. Staff retention is a long-standing issue within the Indiana Department of Corrections. There are consistently hundreds of vacancies across the state's 18 adult prisons. But the problem has gotten worse during the pandemic. Side Effects Public Media's Jake Harper reports from Indianapolis, where the Indiana Women's Prison is located.
I am looking at doing a story on turnover.
Wow. Okay, you're hitting it right at the right time. Oh my God.
Renee moved to Indianapolis a year ago to be closer to her grandkids. She worked at an Amazon warehouse. Then, several months ago, she made a wrong turn and drove by the Indiana Women's Prison. A sign out front said, hiring.
And I pulled into the parking lot because I saw some corrections officers getting off their car. So I asked. And one corrections officer, she said, please get in there. Apply today. We need help. I thought, this is it. This is why I accidentally got off the highway at the wrong spot, you know?
It was far from a dream job, though. 6 months in, Renee quit. She doesn't want speaking out to prevent her from getting another job, which is why I'm using her middle name. Prisons in general are known to have high turnover, and facilities in Indiana are no exception. Charlene Burkett is the ombudsman for the Indiana Department of Correction. She says staff retention has been a major concern for years.
I don't know that you could pay me enough to be a correctional officer, honestly. It's a tough environment.
According to department reports, the number of vacancies has shot up since February, to the highest level since at least 2014. The National Guard was activated in April to help with the shortage.
The COVID crisis has changed everything. A lot of our older officers chose to retire.
I spoke with four former correctional officers at the women's prison. Only one volunteered that they were afraid to catch COVID. Instead, they said COVID made existing problems at the prison worse. Renee says the prison was severely short-staffed. Officers were required to come in 4 hours early or stay 4 hours late.
They're working, 16 plus hours a day. It's crazy.
When the coronavirus hit, the prison went on lockdown. Officers were told to keep women locked in their cells almost the whole day, even though the cells had no toilet or running water, and it could be hotter than outside.
Guards and the inmates were passing out, having seizures. A lot of guards passed out at their desks. That happened, I would say, about four times that I know of.
She felt pressured to treat women more harshly than necessary, to punish them for minor infractions instead of issuing warnings. And she says the veteran officers set a bad example.
We've watched them sleep. We've watched them yell, scream, swear at the inmates. I've seen my lieutenant chest bump, move girls out of the way of the doorway where he walks into. Why are they doing that? That's not our training. That goes against our core values.
Renee says higher-ranking officers micromanaged and yelled at the staff who didn't fit into the culture there. The other former officers I spoke with echoed her concerns. Sarah Knorr quit in July. She had nightmares about the lockdown.
They basically want the officers to treat human beings like animals, maybe even worse.
Indiana corrections officials declined to be interviewed for this story. A spokesperson wrote that the agency looks for people with, quote, fresh perspectives who can make the department better through diversity and a true commitment to changing lives, end quote. He also said that prison officials make efforts to let staff know they're appreciated. Those efforts didn't work to keep Renee. She says her bosses labeled her offender-friendly and gave her a quota to fill, writing up three prisoner offenses a day. But some days, she didn't see three things that warranted write-ups. When a sergeant threatened to discipline her, she walked out.
I'm not taking this anymore. I'm done. We're done. I'm terminating you as my employer, effective immediately.
She says now that she quit, her stress is gone. Jake Harper, Side Effects Public Media.
That's all for today. 217 Today is produced by Olivia Butts. Reporting today contributed by Tony Arnold, Seth Bodine, Dana Cronin, and Jake Harper. Music by the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Brian Moline. 217 Today is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.